found himself on his feet, he looked about him and decided he had never seen a more entertaining sight. The country around appeared like one very big garden, and the enclosed fields, which were generally 40 feet square, resembled so many beds of flowers. The trees in the woods between the fields Gulliver guessed to be about 7 feet high. He viewed the town in his left hand, which looked like the painted scene of a city in a theatre. The emperor had already come down from the tower and was advancing on horseback toward Gulliver. The beast was certainly not used to such a sight, which appeared as if a mountain moved before him, and he reared up on his hind feet. Fortunately, the prince was an excellent horseman and kept his seat. When he alighted, he looked round him with great admiration, but kept beyond the length of Gulliver's chains. Perhaps this is the time to explain a few unusual things. Gulliver was shipwrecked, but managed to make it ashore, where naturally, after such an ordeal, he had fallen asleep. On waking, he had discovered himself to be firmly fastened to the ground and surrounded by human creatures no more than 6 inches high. Eventually, hundreds of these little men had pulled him on the strangest contraption to their town, where he had been chained to the great gate, which was about 4 feet high and almost 2 feet wide. The chains that held his left leg were about 2 yards long, and gave him not only the freedom of walking backwards and forwards in a semicircle, but also allowed him to creep in and lie at full length in the nearby temple. So, this then was where the emperor came to visit Gulliver, and ordered food and drink for him. The emperor himself was taller than the others by almost the breadth of Gulliver's nail. Gulliver lay on his side so that his face was parallel to the emperor's. They spoke to each other, but neither could understand the other. Gulliver spoke in as many languages as he had the least smattering of, which were Dutch, Latin, French, Spanish, and Italian, but all to no purpose. After about 2 hours, the court retired, and Gulliver was left with a strong guard to prevent the people coming near. Some of them shot arrows at him, but the soldiers quickly seized and bound them and delivered them to Gulliver, who picked up 5 of them in one hand and put them in his coat pocket. The 6th one he teased and taunted, but eventually cut the strings and let him free, as he did with the others one at a time from his coat pocket. As news spread through the kingdom of his arrival, great numbers of curious people came to see him. In the meantime, the emperor held frequent council meetings to debate what they should do with Gulliver. They were concerned about his food being so expensive, and that it might cause a famine. Sometimes they determined to starve him, or at least shoot him in the face and hands with poisoned arrows, which would soon dispatch him. However, amidst these meetings, they also heard how kind Gulliver had been to the 6 little prisoners, and so His Majesty sent out orders that all the villages 900 yards round the city should deliver every morning 6 beeves, 40 sheep, plus bread and wine. An establishment was also made of 600 persons to look after Gulliver. Another 300 tailors were ordered to make him a suit of clothes, and 6 of His Majesty's greatest scholars were employed to instruct him in their language. All these orders were duly carried out, and in about 3 weeks, Gulliver made great progress with the language, and gradually he and the emperor were able to have a conversation of sorts. Naturally, Gulliver wished to be set free, but this involved a complete search of himself by 2 officers. Gulliver took them up in his hands and put them in his coat pockets, and then into every other pocket about him, except for 2 fob pockets and another secret pocket, which he had no intention of being searched, because he had some little necessaries that were of no consequence to anyone but himself. They were really searching for weapons. Afterwards, the inventory read something like this: right coat pocket of the great man mountain, a great piece of coarse cloth. Left pocket, a huge silver chest, and so on. They described his watch as a wonderful kind of engine at the bottom of a great silver chain, and after close inspection, they decided it was either some unknown animal or the god that he worships. And so it continued. Eventually, Gulliver handed over both his pistols, his money, a knife, razor, a comb, the snuff box, which of course was the huge silver chest, and his handkerchief, the great piece of coarse cloth. The only thing he kept were his spectacles, because he felt they might be lost or spoiled. The days and weeks passed with Gulliver entertaining the little people, and they in turn amusing him, until at long last, after agreeing to certain conditions in a manner of holding his right foot in his left hand, placing the middle finger of his right hand on the crown of his head and the thumb on the tip of his right ear, the chains were unlocked. His first request on being freed was to see Mildendo, the metropolis. The wall around it was 1 to 1.5 feet high and at least 11 inches broad. Gulliver stepped over this and passed very gently through the streets. Of course, he had to walk carefully for fear of standing on any stragglers. One morning, Reldresel, Principal Secretary of Private Affairs, arrived at Gulliver's house, and he chose to sit in Gulliver's hand while they talked. He told Gulliver of how they laboured under two mighty evils, a violent faction at home, and the danger of an invasion by a most potent enemy from abroad. As to the first, you're to understand that for above 70 moons past, there had been two struggling parties in the empire under the names of Tramaxan and Slamaxan, from the high and low heels on their shoes, by which they distinguished themselves. The invasion they felt threatened by was from the island of Blefuscu, which was the other great empire of the universe, almost as large and powerful as Lilliput. Naturally, Gulliver was prepared to defend himself and the state against all invaders, but the message he sent back to the emperor was that as a foreigner, he felt he shouldn't interfere. However, Gulliver communicated to His Majesty a project he had formed of seizing the enemy's whole fleet, which, so they had been informed, lay at anchor in the harbour, ready to sail with the first fair wind. After consulting with experienced seamen and checking out various things, Gulliver made strong cables with hooks attached, and he went to the northeast coast over against Blefuscu. Putting off his coat, shoes and stockings, he walked into the sea about 30 minutes before high water. Soon he arrived near the fleet, and the enemy were so frightened when they saw him, they leapt out of their ships and swam to shore. Gulliver took his tackle, and fastening a hook to the hole at the prow of each ship, he tied all the cords together at the end. Then taking a knot in his hand, he began to pull. But not a ship moved, as they were all held by their anchors. Therefore, he had to let go the cord and resolutely cut each cable that held the anchors. All this time, the enemy showered him with arrows which hit him in the face and hands. Then he took up the knotted end of the cables to which his hooks were tied and with great ease drew 50 of the enemy's largest men of war after him. The Blefuscudians hadn't the least idea of Gulliver's intentions, and indeed they were astonished. But when they saw the whole fleet moving in order, they set up such a scream of grief and despair it was impossible to describe. The Emperor of Lilliput and his whole court stood on the shore waiting the result of this great adventure. They watched in pain as Gulliver progressed across the channel, at times up to his neck in water. The great prince received him as he stepped ashore and created Gulliver a Nordic upon the spot, which was the highest title among them. Then His Majesty desired that Gulliver take some opportunity of bringing all the rest of the enemy's ships to port. In fact, his one aim was obviously to reduce the whole empire of Blefuscu into a province and govern it by a viceroy. Gulliver protested that he would never be an instrument to be used in bringing free and brave people into slavery, and indeed, when it was discussed by the council, the wisest members were of the same opinion. Unfortunately, though, other members who disliked Gulliver took this opportunity of maliciously turning the Emperor against him. However, about 3 weeks later, there arrived a solemn embassy from Blefuscu with a humble offer of peace. This was soon concluded upon conditions very advantageous to the Emperor of Lilliput, and the ambassadors also took the opportunity of visiting Gulliver. There followed a time of exchange of trade and commerce between both realms, and their young nobility and richer gentry travelled between the two empires in order to polish themselves by seeing the world. Gulliver also went to pay his respects to the Emperor of Blefuscu, but therein lies another tale of Gulliver's travels.